Welcome to Narratives. This small scene of Thomas searching for a long-lost love in a tiny English town illustrates perfectly the quiet desperation we feel when others appear unsympathetic to our quest.
Next morning, the sky over the Marlborough Downs is a steely grey and there's a stiletto-thin icicle forming in my throat. The Downs themselves, dressed in their winter grasses and skeletal copses, along with everything about the village, are the thinnest wash of colour imaginable without turning transparent. The moment the postmistress flicks the sign from closed to open and lifts the latch, I enter the shop and follow her to the counter, where she sits behind a partition of thick glass.
"Yes,"
she says, and I launch into my spiel about finding an old friend called Kate Hanley. Almost before I finish, she lowers her eyes, pulls across a rubber-banded wad of dockets, pension stubs, and begins counting. "Do you know anyone like that?" I ask.
"Couldn't tell you even if I did, ducky. Privacy laws, don't you know?
I've come all the way from Australia." At this, she stops counting and looks over the top of her glasses at me.
"Australia, eh? Internet romance, is it?"
And laughs. "No, she's an old friend. We were supposed to meet, but something happened. All I have is this express envelope to go on. I unfold it on the counter, but she ignores it. "Her brother's dying," I lie. "It's important I find her before it's too late." She pushes her glasses onto the bridge of her nose and sits upright.
"Suppose there ain't no law against telling you what I don't know," she says. "And I don't know no Kate Henry."
"Hanley. Kate Hanley."
"No Kate Henry, nor Kate Hanley."
"What about a Kate? Any Kate? She's probably changed her surname." From a storeroom to one side of the counter, a man appears.
"Whereabouts in Australia?"
"A town called Dungarvan. It's on the coast, a few hours from Melbourne."
"We like to watch Neighbours on TV, don't we, Shirley? That's set in Melbourne."
I try smiling. Shirley turns in her seat and says,
"Do you know anyone called Kate? This man's looking for a Kate."
He shakes his head and walks back into the storeroom, mumbling and chuckling.
"No Kates, no Catherines, no Katies. There's only Shirley in my life."
"You better believe it,"
Shirley calls out to him and returns to her pension stubs.
"What about someone posting this express packet a few days ago?"
"You're joking, right? Give it a rest. Do you know how many people we've had coming through here in the lead up to Christmas? I usually have these stubs counted 2 days back. What with the buses of tourists as well as the regulars, there's been a line to the door from opening time to closing.
Today the shop is empty, and I haven't seen a soul in the streets or a single tourist snapping away at Avebury's standing stones."
"That's a no, then," I ask.
Shirley raises her eyebrows and carries on counting.
"I can sell you a stamp," she offers, then adds, "The woman you're after was probably a tourist passing through. Have you thought of that?"
On my way out, I pass a carousel of Christmas cards and am halted by a familiarity in the style. Flicking through several designs, I pull out one in particular. The illustration is of a cartoon Father Christmas, red-robed and white-bearded, sitting on the branch of a massive Christmas tree in a forest of Christmas trees. Perched next to him is a squirrel, a couple of birds and a mouse, and it's snowing. "This is the card," I say, waving it at the postmistress. "The exact same. She must have bought it here." Pulling Kate's card from my pocket, I hold them side by side for her to compare. Again, she shakes her head, and again, her husband appears from the storeroom.
"Almost every shop in the country sells this brand," she says. "We even got sent one of those, didn't we, Ken?"
He grins, and I can't understand why they're not trying harder. I'm ready to pick up the carousel of cards and shove it through their bloody plate glass. I'm ready to tell them what assholes they are, but I slump and take a step backwards instead. He says,
"It's going to snow."
She says, "I'll believe it when I see it. People blab on about white Christmases every year, but it's only happened once that I remember."
He says, "It's going to snow."
Outside, the cold steel of the sky presses even lower, and the insipid wash has almost frozen. I cough to clear my throat, but the icicle prods my lungs, inspecting each in turn. There's little left to do except walk the silent streets and hope that Kate, if she's here, might look out a window at the moment of my passing. I'd rather do this than admit my loss and head back to Nenford. And there's no betrayal in it. My mother doesn't need me. She never has. If I eat lunch at the pub, I'll get back in time to visit her this evening, and to phone Ellen too. But the tiny windows of each cottage remain empty. The streets abandoned.
You've been listening to Paul Burman reading from his book, The Snowing and Greening of Thomas Passmore. Narratives is produced by Karina Wynne-Moylan of Arts Canvas Bay FM 99.9 and is supported by the Community Broadcasting Foundation.